taking that pressure off and just reframing how we think about music lessons as a society in general, how we think about us ourselves as musical creatures, I think is super important. And honestly, that's my ultimate goal with musicology.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Kay and Joseph Barker, founders of Musicology. Today, we're discussing how kids benefit from learning how to play an instrument, how Kay and Joseph went from touring the country in a vegetable oil-powered vehicle to becoming entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
I spent some time over the weekend listening to Belarus. You guys are super talented, really. I have such an appreciation for what you do. Those at home, check it out. I mean, they're super talented. We're not here to talk about that today. We're here to talk about Musicology, the newest music concept to come into franchising. As far as I know, the only music concept that's doing private lessons. So one of these brands, I look at this and say, like, why hasn't this been done yet? Why did I not do this? And of course, the answer is I have zero music abilities or talent. I never learned a cool instrument like a piano or a guitar. I learned the stupid trombone when I was in elementary school. Cliff, what did you do? The harp, the flute?
No, I did a guitar.
Did you?
I did a guitar, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you were cool.
I thought a guitar was a cool idea. My brother did the drums because he was that kind of kid, loud, obnoxious, banging on things. We were both terrible. We weren't really committed to it, but I have a great appreciation, as I told them, you know, before we started recording. I think that musicians and fitness people are some of the most passionate people. And you know what? I'm learning a lot. We can talk about it later. I'm learning a lot about the just music with the brain, just how healthy it is. For mental health, which people don't realize all this stuff. That's why all this stuff was in school. We did a whole episode on this, by the way. We actually did an episode. If you go early into our episodes, if you remember, we did what we were bearish and bullish on in franchising. And this was one of our bullish, we didn't even know you. You weren't even around then when we did the episode. I mean, Musicology wasn't even on our radar. And we were both like, we're long, we're bullish. Anything, youth enrichment, music, art, anything that helps kids, problem solving, reasoning skills, think creatively, left brain, right brain.
We hate the fact, right, that schools have removed the arts. Athletics, sports, music, art. It's like there are some kids that don't want to be an entrepreneur or a software engineer. They want to be an artist. Improved memory, better concentration, boosted self-esteem, social skills, reduced stress, reduced anxiety. I mean, there's so many benefits of playing music and kids learning an instrument and how to be part of a band or a group. There's so much that goes along with that. And it's gone. And now we have franchising to replace this, which is great.
It is great. And it's a huge opportunity right there. We're here to take advantage of it. I mean, kids need that. Adults need it. And there's this sort of idea in the music community that, you know, you have to have talent and you have to want to become a professional musician or something like that. And that's just not true. It's great for everybody. As you guys just said, it's such a cool thing that should be a part of everybody's life, whether you're going to play Carnegie Hall or not, because chances are you're not, but that's okay. You can play in your bedroom and it can be good for you.
Yeah. I mean, you take an MRI of someone's brain when they're performing music and it is the entire thing lit up. It's you're teaching your brain how to think and function all together. It just doesn't matter how good you are. Like you can say you have zero talent, but if you pick up an instrument and you try to learn something, no matter how it sounds, your brain is getting bigger.
And he's saying that we've fallen prey to teaching to test with like a goal and it's rigid and structured as opposed to just being creative and, hey, you heard a cool tune or melody on the radio, so let's try to play it and maybe write your own song. And like, is that what you've seen? And is that like, how are you guys teaching music? What's the model?
Yeah, every child has a different thing that's going to like light their flame. not just child, like adult too. We learn best when we're excited about what we're learning, you know? That's why we're here with individual lessons, one-on-one lessons, because that's the best way to learn. Every child has something different that's going to fan those flames a little bit, you know? And one kid, it might be something that they hear on the radio. Another kid wants to sing Taylor Swift. Someone heard a jazz piano player, you know, and wants to like rip out a little bit on Korea kind of stuff. I don't know. And so it's just different for every single person. And that's the power of our model, is that we empower our teachers to reach every student right where they're at and light whatever flame that child happens to be.
So is there, like, I used to own personal training franchises. So we would hire fitness enthusiasts. We would certify them in our training protocol. We would teach them our specific methodology. Is there a specific protocol, or are we just kind of matching kids who want to learn an instrument with someone who knows how to teach that instrument, and just we're more matchmakers?
It's really comparable, I think, to what you're talking about. Our teachers are already experts in their instrument, in their genre. But when we bring them into musicology, we are training them in our musicology method. So they go through a series of trainings to kind of address holes that some musicians have. No one really teaches you how to teach a five-year-old when you go to study jazz performance in college. So we have training specifically on that. They go through our training, and we do have proprietary curriculum for some of our group classes and things like that. So it's either that they're using our proprietary curriculum or using vetted third-party curriculum and going through our training. We also have a one-of-a-kind teacher certification program, so it encourages them to keep learning and learn from each other, develop mentorships.
I love all this, but I'm still on vegetable oil. I have to back to the beginning with the whole Belarus thing. So take us from the beginning and actually how you got here. There's a whole journey that we're skipping that I think is really interesting.
I think it starts, first of all, with both of us taking private lessons when we were 5 years old. We started taking piano lessons and then added on other instruments along the way. I studied vocal performance, classical, you know, like opera kind of style singing in college. I met Joseph.
We worked at a restaurant together, yeah. And the owner was a jazz guitar player, and he hired us to do a Valentine's Day gig together. And we were just
Yeah.
We wandered around the dining room, me with a guitar and Kay singing old jazz tunes. And that was kind of it. We never stopped playing music together.
Yeah. We hit the road right after college. We decided to just try to make a go of it as musicians, as a band. That's where Belarus comes in. That's the name of our band. We toured for several years. We toured with Walk the Moon. Those guys are awesome. And we played with Sarah McLachlan. We opened for Heart. A lot of really other amazing artists that we got to meet and play
and
with.
And somewhere along the way, somebody told us that you could run a diesel engine on vegetable oil.
This is a thing. Like diesel engines are meant for farmers to just chuck whatever they had on their farms into it.
We bought a van and converted it and had a tank in the back and a filtration system and a pump. And we would go to Chinese restaurants. And this is really important. McDonald's oil doesn't work. Burger King oil doesn't work. It's got to be Chinese or sushi. And we'd go there and we'd walk up to the front desk and be like, hey, we don't want any food. What we want is your vegetable oil in the dumpster in the back. And they'd look at us like we were crazy. But, you know, usually we'd be able to do it and we'd siphon it out and run our van on that oil. And it was great. It smelled like fried food.
We wanted this to be our business. It was our first venture into being business owners and marketing and things like that.
I started a business at 8 years old. I started a stationery company and I created, hand drew a bunch of stationery and then sold it to my family at wildly inflated prices.
That's great.
That was my first arts and entrepreneurship.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you. I'm still hung up on like you two toured and made like you made a living playing music. Like that is like, it's the dream. Like what percentage of the population actually gets to live out that dream?
Yeah, we have kind of lived charmed lives.
Our very first tour was not in the vegetable oil van. It was in a station wagon that Kay's parents gave us. We toured all summer and we got back home and we each made $500. So we paid for the whole tour and we came away with $500. And that was like, that was it for us.
We're this is what I'm doing. We hit the lottery.
It's a career now.
But while we were on the road, you know, we were on the road sometimes. And then when we would come back to, we were living in Minneapolis at the time, I started teaching lessons to kind of just fill in the gaps. I just fell in love with teaching. I mean, you know, performing is awesome. It's really great. There are a lot of highs on the road, but there's also a lot of lows. And teaching was just like, it was that fire of passion in me. And so we started doing less touring. I started doing more teaching, more and more teaching at other studios and then starting my own studio in my house. Finally, I just realized this is it. This is where we need to be. And we both kind of looked around and realized that the music lessons industry just needed some updating. It's a lot of mom and pops, so it's super fragmented. And so there was a space for us to come in and provide a community-focused music lesson studio with a really cool vibe and with the modern approach that parents kind of come to expect from their extracurriculars for their kids, right? Like really easy scheduling, software kind of things like that. So in 2014, we sort of went all in on musicology, creating this separate place outside of my home and bringing other teachers in. And it's just kind of been growing from there, like steadily. We've built it up to 6 corporate locations over those 10 years since then, building our processes, making it so we could run it from home and having all the processes and things for teachers and stuff. So building our own proprietary software. And so last year we kind of looked around and we were like, this is something we could give to other people. You know, this could be a franchise system. Enter Annie, enter Repham Group this past year. And we found our first franchisees. They are multi-unit owners and they're also sort of running it as an executive model part-time, keeping their day jobs. So here we are now. We have 2 franchise unit locations and we're ready to grow.
That's great.
That executive model is really important. I think we wanted to get our systems dialed in so that we could be extricated from the business and we didn't have to rely on, say, somebody who was a musician to run the business and be there every day. And so once we had that and once we were confident that we could kind of step back and the studios could grow, they could operate, our managers could hire those musicians and vet them, and we had all that dialed in, that's when we said, okay, this can work on a larger scale.
It could work on a larger scale, be replicated across the United States. And the owner doesn't need to be an owner-operator, nor do they need a musical background.
Exactly.
Can you manage? Can you acquire customers? Can you run the day-to-day operation of the business? I don't need you to train students.
We have the training. We have all of the teacher vetting and teacher interviewing processes all down. Like, all of that stuff is there. So what we are looking for is someone who, number one, is like super passionate about music, about bringing this child enrichment, family enrichment, adult enrichment to their neighborhood, but can do the marketing, can go out into the community and make those connections.
I know plenty of audiophiles. They have no voice, they have no skills, they can't use their sausage fingers on a guitar. But they love music. They can't do anything without music. I don't know if you remember 2007, the USA track and field, they said you need to remove headphones from marathons. Any sanctioned races, they said no more music. And everyone was like, wait a second. If you take away music from a marathon, I might not even be able to finish the race. That's how important music is. They ended up flipping that decision, I believe, 2 years later due to outrage and a bunch of studies that came out about music. And they said that if a cyclist is listening to music during a race, they require like 10% less oxygen. Isn't that crazy?
Is that true?
You can look it up. I had to look it up because, you know, you hear these things. I'm like, all right, I have to see this study. They have proven that when you listen to music, and I've done this on a treadmill in a gym, I'll run and I hate running. I hate it. So I'll run and all I do is watch the clock. I just can't wait to be done. I can't wait to hit whatever the goal is. Is it caloric burn? What is the goal? Is it mileage? Is it time? But when I watch TV on a treadmill, it is a useful distraction of the pain that I'm experiencing. And I'll look up and I'll be like, wow, that was 30 minutes.
There's no doubt that that music creates physiological changes in the body. There's no doubt that it affects mood. If I'm listening to an upbeat, right, intense song, my heart rate, I'm sure, is elevated. There's no doubt. I could totally see that happening.
Performing it too is like that times like 10, at times 100. It's just like it's meditative, you know, to play a song that you know how to play and to sit down and just pour your feelings into it. Your brains are all firing at the same rate all together. It just, like I said, it makes
Where was musicology during COVID when I was trying to learn my Damien Rice song on my piano that I bought?
We were there, man. We were all virtual. We were growing too, because parents were like, what's my kid going to do when they're sitting at home? Let's do some piano lessons.
So that's an interesting question though, right? Because everything went virtual, I'm assuming. Everyone's doing like virtual music lessons and virtual anything lessons. And now we're going back to in-person. Is it that much more impactful being in-person? Do you still do virtual? Like, how is that working?
Yeah, it's interesting. We had been talking about how, we're all in-person. Should we go virtual and things like that? And then COVID hit. And first of all, we had to retool everything and all go virtual. We have our proprietary software that's like student facing. And so it was super easy to add the virtual component to that. And now our students can do in-person, they can do virtual, they can change their in-person lesson to a virtual lesson, which is like one click if they're feeling sick or they're traveling or something. But we've actually felt like a backlash towards the virtual thing. I think parents realized that no, in person is really the best.
I want to get my kid out of the house.
Yeah.
Socializing with someone else, off away from their computer screen.
We started with all in person to begin with. It's because I strongly believe that whatever we're offering, it needs to be the best way for students to learn, musicology. I want it to be the best damn music school. To quote
one of our favorite Google reviews is from an old student named Colin, who said musicology is the best damn private lesson school around.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't want to do virtual lessons because I've done them before and they're hard. And, during COVID, it's what we had to do. But now we focus on in-person because that's, you learn the most. And, a kid gets to have that special time with a mentor, someone who grows with them through their childhood, which is just something that you don't really get very much of as a kid, an adult, not a parent who is sticking with your changes with you. And
yeah, we tell our teachers, in some cases, these kids, they take lessons for years and years, So they're 5, 8, 10 years in lessons. And that music teacher next to their immediate family members is the most consistent person in their lives. Because every year in school, they get a new coach, they get a new teacher. So that music teacher can be this really solid adult presence in their life. And that's hugely beneficial.
I like it. We talked about the corporate stores. I want to go back there for a minute. Is there an item 19 in the FDD? Did you guys do an earnings claim? Is it the corporate stores?
It is. Yeah, exactly.
What does it look like?
Yeah. So I think the important thing about the model is the membership that we have. Every student is on that membership. And so it's this recurring revenue that you can see, that you can model, that is so, so consistent. That's the first thing to know about our item 19. The AUV is $545.
Wow.
And then, the profit is a little over 20% that's fallen to the bottom line.
Your average corporate store is doing over $500,000 in top line gross with 20% dropping to the bottom line.
Yep, exactly right.
Wow.
Roughly how many students do you have?
290 is the average number. So if you're, we shoot for somewhere in there between 250 and 300.
250, 300 students per location. They train or they learn once a week. What's the frequency of visit? Weekly?
Yep, exactly. So the core offering is a 30-minute weekly lessons.
Flat rate billing, right? Membership model only. Yep. Don't just walk in here and say, hey, I just want to do 2 classes, 3 classes.
We'll do that kind of stuff on a one-off basis if somebody needs to prepare for an audition or something. But that's not the model. The model is that 30-minute recurring weekly private lesson. So every Tuesday at 5 p.m., you drop your kid off, they do their drum lesson. And then, every quarter we do a concert. And so everybody shows up, they play their songs, they see all the other kids and adults. We separate those. There's a kids concert and an adult concert. And we do an annual all-star concert. So making it a community experience is a really, really important aspect of the business and being a franchisee.
Are those concerts revenue streams as well?
They're not right now. That's an opportunity that we're going to look at in the next year.
where's the money in the business? Meaning 80% of our revenue is like ages 15 and under. Like, where's the money being made in this business?
It's exactly what you just said.
Really?
Yeah, it's about 80%. It's probably 5 to 12 is what the core demographic is. Once you get into middle school, those kids, if music is their thing, they'll stick with it. But there's a whole variety of other things that are pulling it. So at that point, there's a little bit of a drop off. But the 5 to 12 age range, and then young adults and retirees. So young professionals, I mean, people who are in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s, who have, they've got a good job, they've gotten some money, they got a guitar sitting in the corner. They're like, hey, I want to finally do this thing. They come to us and, you know, learn Damien Rice or whatever they're working on.
Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah, Damien Rice is...
That's what he went through. Justin wanted to do that. He was like 40, right? Late 30s or 40. And you're like, I got to learn an instrument.
What Cliff wants to know is, would you teach a grown-ass man how to learn an instrument?
Yeah.
100.
Hell yeah.
Join us.
Is it harder though, like learning a language? It's easier to learn a language when you're a child versus an adult. Is it same apply to music?
No, this is a misconception. You're smarter as an adult. You know how to learn now. You've learned how to learn. So there's a couple things that make it trickier as an adult. Number one, you don't have your parent forcing you to practice every day. That's really nice.
That's why I need musicology, accountability.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to have someone else kind of be in that like daily. So it's a little bit harder to find that self-motivation. And then there's a little bit of like, you're so smart that it kind of outstrips the muscular learning that you have to do to learn an instrument, that just doesn't matter how smart you are, like you just have to put in the hours for it. So sometimes that mismatch can feel really difficult to an adult learner. We have it's called Accelerated Piano Lab, and we have a similar thing for guitar as well. You just need hours at your instrument. And so we do like longer sort of group style, lab style classes for students who want to kind of accelerate that learning. And it's really great for adults.
I really wonder what the data is on musicians with like dementia, people who engage in music. I love all this stuff where you're like, I hear these people, my mom, you know, she's slipping. They're on statins and right, they're destroying their brain. They don't play Sudoku. They don't do anything. And then there's people who age with music. I play an instrument. I fool around with this. I play these brain games. It's like, do they get dementia? How come everyone has dementia all of a sudden? Like everybody.
If you play an instrument, the chances of you getting dementia is much less. My grandma just passed away at 96 and she was sharp as an arrow. And she played piano until the day that she died.
I could see that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had a question when I was going through the website. It is so much more than music. Like you're missing the point. No, it's just art. It's like they could do it at home. It's fine. It's not just about art. There are so many unintended benefits, right? When I was on the website, I noticed that there would be a name of a person and then it would say M1, M4. Like what does that mean? And am I paying a premium for M4? Or is M1 better than M4? What does that mean?
Yeah, so that's our teacher certification program. Our teachers are working their way up to M5. It reflects number of hours teaching at musicology. It reflects ongoing personal and professional development. Our higher M4s and 5s are mentors to our sort of beginner teachers, M1s and 2s that are coming in. It's our proprietary way that we are encouraging our teachers to become even better teachers and to grow each other in our system.
Love that.
And I don't pay a premium for them, like a better trainer. Like Justin would charge me a premium as a, let's say, an M5 personal trainee. He'd say I'm, you know, $150 an hour versus M1.
Yeah, you know, we don't. And one of the reasons is, you know, those all of our teachers fill up really quickly. And so the higher levels fill up a little bit more quickly. And so people have a waiting list. But, you know, we want to keep it simple and we want to make every parent understand what they're getting. And then we want the parents and the students to love the musicology experience versus their experience with a specific teacher. And so we actually encourage them to take lessons with a variety of different teachers. And, you know, if I have to miss a lesson, I can cancel and then I can reschedule. It's super easy. We really want to discourage students from becoming enamored of one particular teacher, and that's the only person that they'll study with. So yeah, we have those levels. And so if you're an advanced piano player, you're learning a jazz tune or something, then maybe you're like, okay, I do want the M5. That's a very small percentage. Most of our students are 5 to 12, and so they can learn with anybody.
Let's get Annie involved. Let's bring Annie. Annie is the franchise development director for Musicology, so she'll be taking candidates through the discovery process. Annie, talk to us about the footprint. So this is brick and mortar. How much space do we need? And then help us with the staffing models. If the owner is not teaching lessons and they don't necessarily have to be involved in the actual operations of the facility, are we hiring managers? What is the initial staffing model and the footprint?
So footprint, we want to see about 1,200 to 1,900 square feet, give or take. It's a very flexible build-out model, which is wonderful. They have a very cool Victorian-style home that they converted into a Musicology. It's very eclectic. There's another one that's more of a Class A-type real estate with ceiling-to-floor windows. What we want to see is inside the Musicology, it's a fairly easy build-out. We're going to have about 6 to 10 private music lesson rooms, 80 to 100 square feet, approximately semi-soundproof, not 100% soundproof. There is going to be a waiting room for parents that has, you know, magazines, toys for the younger siblings to play with when they're waiting. Every lesson room has its own security camera, which is great. So if a parent wants to go run some errands, drop their child off, they know that they're in a happy, safe place. And, you know, honestly, with this being an executive model and not needing any music experience or music theory, music talent to be an owner. Everyone has, I think, a music lesson story. I know I do. I took piano lessons as a child and I probably would have stuck with them had I not taken lessons like in a basement apartment by myself. You know, the energy and the feel of a Musicology is delightful. You know, music lessons, there's someone taking voice lessons that you can hear in a couple rooms down. There's a kid on the bass who's in the Musicology rock band. Kids may start with one instrument and fall in love with another one. I think it's really going to keep kids engaged. Adults as well. Drop your child off to take piano in one lesson room and I want to go learn how to play the electric guitar, same time frame in another room. As far as people coming, there are some competitors out there, not many. This is such an opportunity to be able to have an entire territory for an owner who really wants to scale. There's School of Rock and there's Bach to Rock. Those are pretty much the only two big players out there besides the mom and pops. Having all of the genres of music, not just rock, like School of Rock, really putting that focus on one-on-one private music lessons with the opportunity to also perform in a group, I really think is what makes Musicology stand out. Also empowering teachers. I know that most music teachers probably don't get paid what they wish they did. So they're always looking to supplement their income. This is a great way and a place for them to go without worrying about, I need to get home and clean my house because Susie and, you know, Brian are going to be there in a half hour for their piano lesson, commute to someone else's house. This is a community for them to come to belong, to learn from other teachers, to learn with their certification program and, you know, to get benefits offered. You know, they can work really as many hours as they want. So it's not just empowering, I think, students and parents, but the teaching community, which in essence empowers the entire community. I am so excited to self-brand. I came on to the repping group 2.5 months ago, only because of Musicology. Once I learned of this, met Joseph and Kay, I was like, let's do this, because every single person that I have talked to about Musicology is engaged. And everybody has that music lesson story. And I can tell you a lot of people are like, God, I wish I stuck with it. And I think people will.
Describe the two franchisees, the first two. Who are they? Backgrounds? What kind of franchisees are they? You know, skill sets, profession?
Yeah, it's a husband and wife. They had kids in lessons with us. They're not musicians themselves. He is an amateur drummer, but not professional in any sense, but they recognize the power of music in their kids' lives and wanted to be a part of it. He is in data analytics and she is in marketing They are keeping their day jobs and have taken two territories in Columbus. So they're right nearby. Their second location is opening up.
Well, they were both startups.
The first one was a resale.
All right. So they did a resale, then bought another license, and they're going to open up a second location from the ground up. What's the go-to strategy for acquiring customers without disclosing any secret sauce? Just you could speak in general terms. How are you acquiring customers to do this?
In the beginning, it's digital ads and it's getting into the community a lot. As your studio grows, it's a lot of word of mouth and community events. You kind of reach like a tipping point where just you have enough students and enough sort of clout that it's sort of a self, you know, feeding machine. You get about 200 students and it just kind of takes off, we found. So, but yeah, at the beginning, it's a heavy spend in digital marketing. And we have a really robust pre-sales campaign that we do pre-opening because we want to get, I mean, ideally up to kind of a break-even number of students on day one.
And don't you have founders?
I've done some Google searches for music lessons in different markets. There's really not a lot of like professional businesses doing this. It's so fragmented. It's maybe a few people doing it out of their homes, but I would think like cost per click is so cheap. Like who's bidding on this?
Exactly right. And we've been dialing in our digital ads processes for years now. And so our support team manages that for franchisee. And so all they got to do is, you know, we build out their business plan with them and say, how many students do you want to open with? All right, let's estimate what that spend is going to be. And then, you know, we'll manage the digital ad spend. All you got to do is have your manager ready to take those leads. The other key piece of it, like Kay said, is being in the community. And so you can't do it just with digital. It's a big part of it, but you got to be in the community, meet with PTOs, schools, be at table events, that kind of thing.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Like aftercare, you look at these brands like Snapology and Challenge Island and all the STEM brands and I-9 Sports. They go right after the schools, the underserved market. It's a captive audience of your 80%, as you said, right? 5 to 12. Is that what you said to me? Ages five to 12. I mean, that's school.
Yep.
Yep.
I could see that being just a target-rich environment, going after all these people, marketing to them. Now they have to come to you, right? You don't provide any transportation. The parent, someone needs to bring the student to you.
Yeah, that's right. That's correct. That neighborhood school, the parent needs to come drop their kid off. We like to be, because of that, we like to be in a neighborhood. So instead of being in, you know, a sort of a strip center that's on an interstate, we like to actually sort of be closer to some schools, churches, where people are living, you know, so next to something like a Goddard School or a Goldfish Swim, that kind of.
What's the cost to open it? You've opened 6 or 8 of them, right? What's the cost to open a Musicology?
Yeah, so it's $196 at the low end and then up to $370 at the high end.
The spread is it the size, the number of classrooms?
Yeah, exactly. The spread is mostly related to the build out. And so you can get a really low cost build out if you, depending on your TI dollars, we've gone into existing footprints that were just an office that had 6 rooms ready to go. You can get that and you don't have to do really any build out at all. You just got to do the FF&E and put up signage and paint. We've also gone into Class A vanilla box, and that's going to be more on the high end where you have to add all the rooms. But again, you'll get some TI dollars for that. So, but that's the biggest kind of wild card.
And the Build'em team at the Repin Group is also there to help and project manage all of that. So if someone is intimidated with that whole real estate piece or the territory piece, our Build'em team is going to be there to project manage it, to help with the negotiation of the lease, and really just take all of the legwork out of that real estate piece.
A lot of brands don't have that. A lot of young brands do not have that resource, and people end up in bad leases, bad negotiations.
They don't understand real estate themselves. How could they advise the franchisee?
Exactly. What does the staffing model look like when I open, since I'm not doing the lessons?
Right. So you'll hire a community manager, is what we call our general managers. You'll have one person who, it's a full-time position, and they'll be managing, doing the hiring of the teachers. They'll be in there greeting students, scheduling, and things like that. So that's your first main hire.
Give me a salary range on that person.
$40,000.
Okay.
And then you'll bring in 3 to 5 part-time teachers to start. All of our teachers are part-time and it's after school hours primarily. So you can't get up to 40 hours a week with that. You're going to end up with maybe 15 part-time teachers, but to start, it's just 3 to 5. You know, you can get teachers who teach multiple instruments and kind of start with your core teachers, core instruments there. And then your staffing needs will grow as your students.
And that's the great piece of the model is that, you know, you're paying the teachers when they're in a room with a student, and when they're not, you're not paying them. So that staffing expands based on how your studio is growing.
I love it. That's why I was thinking aftercare. You remind me, you're a brick and mortar, but to me, it's when I say aftercare, I mean after 2:30 p.m., right? It's like school's out, parents work. I was that father. My wife and I both worked. We can't pick him up at 2:30 in the afternoon. We immediately put him into a program, whether he was doing art or sports or music. We just expose them to all this stuff and you just see what sticks, right? I love these parents. It's like, no, you got to get a scholarship. You got to play this. You got to play that. It's like, what do you want to do? We're just going to expose you to everything. You'll get hit by something you love and then you'll latch onto it, right? And then go with it. And of course, you know, he found his way and now he's 16 years old. So I like it. I like the model and I like the part-time. I like that a lot. It was like when you look at like cleaning, when you look at a maid service, it's like, it's more difficult to find those people because it's actually full-time. But when you go to commercial cleaning and it's working after, let's say 5, 6 p.m., when you leave the office, tons of people that have full-time careers that want to make extra money, that want to work after hours. It was so much easier to find those folks than a full-time during the day employee. So I like the model. Yes, it's during the day, but it's part-time. I could have a career, do something on the side.
Yeah. And a lot of these are teachers, you know, they're teaching in school and then they're coming over and they're teaching for us. Or it's gigging musicians, right? They perform on Fridays and Saturdays, but during the week, they teach lessons with us. Finding teachers, we have resources for all of that. They're out there. They're looking for ways to supplement their income. They're super passionate. They're incredibly smart. It's a really fun group of people to work with and to provide this opportunity for. Like Annie said, we provide benefits to our teachers, healthcare, things like that. That if you're a gigging musician, when we were gigging musicians, we didn't have that. And it's super powerful. And we want to be a place for our students and for our teachers.
Another question I have, and then you can wrap us up because we're right there at the timeline. In fitness, the average person walks in the gym and out the back door in under 10 months, in and out. That's my issue with fitness, right? Just we've owned 3 gyms together. To me, it's just a constant revolving door. Right now in my town in Delray Beach, we had an LA Fitness. It is a ghost town in there because someone just opened up down the street. The place is dead. Matter of fact, it's so dead that I'm not sure they're going to make it. And this is an LA Fitness. It's massive. There's no one in there. I'm blown away by what just happened to this gym. You know, on this show, we keep talking about it. We don't like gyms. We don't like semi-glutides. Everyone's now on injectable Ozempic and Wegovy. I think it's going to I got to tell you, there is a tumbleweed in my gym in Boca Del Rey. Like, this is a vain place. But I think they're all doing other things.
You know, it's funny you say that, Cliff. On the All In pod this week, they're talking about what's happened with Starbucks and their stock. And Chamath believes that it's semaglutides and people just not wanting fatty, sugary drinks anymore. Semaglutides could kill Starbucks. Like, the thought of that is just insane.
It is. We talk about this like on every episode because it's such a huge part of life. There's Joseph and Kate, there's no doubt you know people in your circle on these things, right? These injectables, especially people you know that have lost weight rapidly. And it's like, okay, you're definitely on an injectable. What RFK actually explained it better. He said it actually messes with your reward system. So when you do something, you just talked about music. So let's say you know, you're working on a melody or something, right? You're working on a string. You're working on some intro and it like, you got it. You just get a dopamine hit, like right there on the spot. And I'm not talking about a cheap, I got a text from an ex-girlfriend dopamine hit. I'm talking about a real dopamine hit from a reward of doing something. RFK is explaining these semiglutides differently, saying the reward you get from, I need comfort food. I just want a cake. I had a really bad day. Like, it's gone. There's no longer a reward. So you don't look at cake and you don't look at cookies, or maybe you're predisposed to salt. You don't look at chips the same way you did when you got those cheap dopamine hits. It's going to Justin's point, These semi-glutides are going to have an unintended consequence in many industries.
Where are you going? Are you trying to say that I'm no longer going to enjoy music if I'm on a GLP-1?
Honestly, music lessons teaches you how to harness that reward system, right? You work really hard at something, you fail over and over again, and you learn that you can finally, eventually succeed. You can get up in front of people, and that's the ultimate dopamine hit right there. Get up in front of people, perform, and like friggin' did it, you know? Those type of experiences, especially for a young mind, are transformative. I mean, that's why we're sitting here, is because I learned I can do anything. If I just work for hours and hours, I can do it, you know, and I can build a company and I can build it for other people too. You know, I mean, you just learn those things as a kid and it's humongous. And you come back to the revolving door thing. I mean, our students, when they find a teacher, when they find a program that they really love, they stay for years, you know, and the longer your studio is around, the more of those students you have. And so, you know, you get a few years in and your studio is built on this like bedrock of students who aren't going anywhere.
I love that.
One of those things, like no one ever regrets sticking with an instrument and actually learning how to play it. The regret is always, I wish I would have stuck with it.
Yes.
And I think a lot of the reason why people pull their kids out or kids quit is because we put so much pressure on, like, you got to practice an hour a day or you need to achieve and get to, like, I think about it like a gym. Like, this is brain food. This is incredible. Are you going to play Carnegie Hall? Are you going to become a professional musician? Who cares? Just put in a little bit of time every day. For my students who are bogged down with homework and soccer practice and stuff. Okay, cool. Well, music doesn't have to be like this thing that you just kind of throw out because you can't practice an hour a day. Just put in a little bit of time, taking that pressure off and just reframing how we think about music lessons as a society in general, how we think about us ourselves as musical creatures, I think is super important. And honestly, that's my ultimate goal with musicology. I just want to change how people think about themselves. You say, I have zero music talent. No, you don't. You play, you're trying to learn Damien Rice.
Okay, you're warming my heart right now.
Warming his heart. That's not easy to do.
Yeah. So number one, let's stop telling kids that they're not musical. And number two, let's stop telling ourselves. Like every adult that tells me that they aren't musical is they had some adult when they were 8 years old tell them that they couldn't play the recorder and they needed to stop and you're terrible. I don't want to hear it. Like those adults need to go away.
Freaking Miss Fontaine screaming at me because I didn't practice for 2 hours my stupid recorder.
Exactly.
And then I'm supposed to enjoy music.
I want adults to stop telling kids that they're not musical. I want us to start telling ourselves that music makes us human. Let's just friggin' do it. Like, who cares how good you are? So there you are.
It's clean, it's wholesome, and it has a meaningful impact on the life of a child. Love it. You had me like right there. And it's a great legacy to be in a brand and look back in your life when you're 80 and say, what did you do? How did you give back to society? How did I give back? I trained 700,000 kids between 5 and 12. I mean, what are we doing? Justin, what are we doing?
They're empowering kids. We're empowering entrepreneurs.
Totally.
I think about an owner who is going to one of the concerts and maybe they, you know, are like, oh my gosh, this is my first concert. And if it was me and my musicology and there's a kid up there plinking on the piano or singing in the rock band and I look over at their parents and their parents' reaction watching their child, you know, just so proud or like giggling because of how they're plinking away. Like to me, being a musicology owner would just make me say, I want to open 10 more. When you see just the proudness of parents or the teacher, the student who stands up and bows after people are applauding them, like that's what it's about. And making money.
Yeah, the look on a kid's face when they just got up and they did that thing and they didn't know if they could do it and they stand up and they walk off that stage. It's honestly, that's amazing.
If I own 3 locations, do I need a manager in each one or are there economies of scale? Can I have one manager overseeing 2 or 3 of these things or no? Do I need a person in each location?
So what we do is we have a full-time manager in every location. What you could do though is you could split that out and you could have 2 managers and then you could have a couple of part-time front desk people. I think you'd probably end up with the same payroll though. I think there are economies of scale for sure. And you can kind of mess with that a little.
So manager's role is scheduling, hiring, training, leading.
Yeah, exactly.
Our proprietary software takes all of the daily tasks and scheduling and makes it super easy. Other studios, mom and pops, things like that have multiple people working that scheduling role. Our software made it possible to narrow that down into just one full-time position for a studio. When you have hundreds of students, it can be a scheduling nightmare. Our software puts all of that into our students' hands. So mostly it's students and teachers who are taking care of their own scheduling because they're empowered to do so. But you really, I think what you're going to find with the economy of scale is sort of its marketing power, right, in a whole community. And it's also really getting to do really cool events. Like we do citywide concerts at really awesome venues for auditioned sort of things. We call them our all-star concerts. Those kinds of economies of scale really, really work. But you do need one person in each studio to take that one and be, this is my baby and this is my community right here and being out there. We are community focused. And so that is important.
All right. Go ahead, Cliff. Give us some final thoughts.
No, here. I love it. I said it. Maybe Ezra can shift my words around. I think I said what I said. I love brands that intervene meaningfully in a life of our children, right? Our grandchildren, whatever. I just love brands like that. And I think that this is one of those brands. Look, tree trimming is cool. Tree trimming, pest control, I get it. You can make money. It does provide a service. It fills a void. But this is a next level. Now you're getting into legacy. Now you're getting into, you know, none of us have been 80 before. None of us. No one can say you know what it's like to be in your deathbed or to be 80 and to look back in your life and say, I have a legacy and I'm so damn proud of it. And this is what I've done with my life and how I gave back. I think you have to fight and protect the next generation. I don't know what's going on right now. So I love brands like this. You guys are doing a great job. We're proud of you and we're proud of the brand. And we would love to refer our clients to you folks.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Goodbye, but don't leave. Goodbye for now.